Sabbath are family days. Sabbaths are days for everyone to stop rushing off on their daily routines and to just come together and share the day in worship and fellowship. When we're small and we're living with our mother and father, we take that for granted and don't think much about it. It just happens. But as we grow older, we go off to school, and one responsibility in life leads to another responsibility, and our obligations keep us away from home for longer and longer periods of time. We begin to realize that those days when we were small, we could be with mother and dad every Sabbath, that those are precious days. And that somehow we seem to value them more and more now that they're scattered out and come fewer and fewer. When we go to heaven, our lives will become involved with courses of study and occupations and exciting things that we have chosen to do and to grow in. Our travels and studies will take us to the far corners of God's universe. And therefore, God has designed Sabbaths in heaven so that we will come back to our Father's house and we will be together. And the fantastic thing about life in heaven will be that our obligations will not take us to such distances that we cannot return. For every Sabbath, we will come back to the city. And on Sabbath mornings, we will gather in the throne room and we will all be there. Oh, how we will value those days with our Father and with our brother Jesus. They will be good days. I've often wondered if the Sabbaths in heaven will come every 7 days. If so, by what standard of time do we measure days? Does the sun come up and go down in heaven? I read a verse somewhere where it says there is no sun there. How is time measured? And if it's measured, is it measured by the 7-day cycle of this world, even though we're off and away from this world? Is there ever a time when it is Sabbath here on this earth and also Sabbath in heaven at the same time? Or could there be Sabbath in all of the universe at the same time? It would be so flippant and easy for us this evening to say, well, yes, of course. When Sabbath comes, it's Sabbath everywhere. But then you have to start thinking about what Sabbath is. And Sabbath is so related to the speed of the rotation of this earth and its size and its mass and its gravitational fields and all of that. Actually, for only one point in time each week, is it Sabbath on 100% of the surface of this world? At the international dateline on Friday night, as the sun goes down, as the sunset works its way around the world, it seems to gobble or just eat up the sixth day. And it works its way around the world until it comes to the international dateline again. And at that point, not even a second, because a second is a span of time, but just a point for an instant, as sunset now reaches the international dateline again, just for that point, the whole 100% surface of the world is keeping Sabbath. Because the next instant, that sundown now becomes Saturday sundown and begins to eat up the Sabbath as it moves around again. Could it be possible that in the universe, at that one point of time at sundown, at the international dateline, the whole universe is 100% in Sabbath. It's very complex. The speeds of other planets, their orbits, their rotations, their size. And yet, I really believe that our God is so complexly intelligent that if He chose to do so, it could be done. There is nothing impossible for Him. Well, whatever. We do know that there will be Sabbaths in heaven. And we do know that we will be there with Him and with Jesus. And that's going to be great. Have you ever wondered what it would be like to spend Sabbath with Jesus? I think we can get a little hint about what it would be like by studying Jesus' Sabbath keeping in the Gospels. It's Sabbath morning in the synagogue, and Jesus is there, and He's teaching. And as He is teaching, He looks up and He sees in the crowd a woman who seems to have a problem. She isn't sitting like the rest of the people are sitting. Dr. Luke tells us about her. It seems that, well, it probably happened some like this. One morning she got up out of bed and she felt a little stiff. And she thought to herself, I really slept wrong last night. And as she worms and squirms and stretches, the stiffness seems to disappear and she goes about her duties for the day. But the next morning she wakes up and the stiffness is there again. And this day it doesn't go away, but seems to stay all day. And the next day she discovers that she's a little more comfortable going around her work if she just bends over, just a little bit. And it all happens so gradual that it is a while before people notice that she is continually walking just a little bit bent over. Soon people get used to seeing her being bent over, but the disease is progressive. And little by little over the years, it slowly bends her over and she can no longer stand up. She cannot sit in chairs and seats like other people. She has to be specially cared for. But she loves the Lord and she still struggles to church on Sabbath mornings, even if she cannot stand up. And this morning as Jesus sees her, Dr. Luke tells us that He directs that she should come to Him. It must have been very difficult for her to get up. Others must have come and helped her. She is bent over now, almost folded up. But she is brought to Jesus. And there in the presence of the multitude on that Sabbath morning, Jesus said to her, "Oh, my dear lady, your infirmity is cared for." And He reached out and He took His hands and He put them on her forehead. And with all of the ease that He had in Him, He just straightened her up. And there was no pain. And she stood straight and tall. And everyone in the church marveled at... Wouldn't it have been exciting to be there? Oh, I'm sure that the people that were there in that synagogue that morning, their hearts must have overflowed with love and joy. And in heaven, there will be no diseases and infirmities for Jesus to heal. That will all have been cared for already. But I think that same warm feeling that was in that synagogue that Sabbath morning, that same warm, heart-flowing experience will be with us when we're there in heaven with Him. I've often thought about coming in to my Father's house on Sabbath morning in heaven. What is our Father's house like? When you come home to visit, one of the places that the family usually congregates is the living room.
In our Father's house is a living room with our Father's chair in it. His throne.
The living room of heaven must be the throne room. And the decor must be out of this world. Literally.
The walls. The walls lined as far as you can see with gorgeous seraphim and cherubim.
The ceiling of God's throne room, our living room, a vaulted ceiling with galaxies spread out in systematic designs all over it. As we look at the stars at night, it looks like God has just scattered the stars helter-skelter across the sky. But I believe that we only see it that way because it's from our perspective. I somehow believe that His throne is the center of it all, and it all revolves around His throne, not helter-skelter, but systematically designed. Our God is a God of law and order. And surely the galaxies must lay out across the black velvet of the sky like diamond brooches, intricately placed. So beautiful in their complex designs that it would make a Michelangelo stand back in awe at the artistic touch. And then as we stand there and view all of this, we behold myriads of intelligent beings now flowing in from these galaxies for worship on Sabbath morning to join us. Beautiful, intelligent beings, each individually distinct. It's amazing how God loves individuality. He loves each one of us to be our own person. In this congregation tonight, there isn't one of us here that looks like the other. Unless there's twins here and I'm not aware of. Isn't that amazing, though, when you think about it? I mean, listen, we all have basically the same equipment. A nose in the middle of our face, two eyes and a mouth, a couple of ears hanging on the side, and some of this stuff up here. Well, some of us have stuff up here. Most people at least started out with some of it up there. But it's absolutely amazing with such a few basic components to get such a tremendous variety of people. It's amazing. And I really believe that God is a lover of beauty and a lover of diversity. And as these creatures come in from all over the galaxies to worship, that each one of them has their own specific design and characteristics. Maybe in the universe somewhere there really are little green men. But if there are, they won't be repulsive or ugly little green men. They will be beautiful. Beautiful and handsome and intelligent in design. Any of you that are bird watchers, you know what I'm talking about. In the spring now, just in a few weeks, the warblers will be flowing through here by the hundreds and thousands. You go out in the woods in a Sabbath morning and you watch the warblers come floating through, and there's blackpoll warblers and bay-breasted warblers and profonatory warblers. Each one of them distinctly different. And yet, each one of them a warbler, and each one of them beautiful. I think that's really going to be exciting to see them come. I was riding through one of these little cars at Disney World not too long ago, and we went through the exhibit called "It's a Small, Small World," and those of you that have seen "It's a Small, Small World," you are surrounded on both sides by this tremendous variety of children from all over the world with their fantastic costumes. And in the car in front of us, there was a very verbal little boy who was enjoying the whole thing immensely. And I was enjoying immensely listening to his response. And he was looking here and looking over there, and finally he turned to his dad and he said real loud, he said, "Dad, just look at me. Look in this way and look in this way. I can't see it all. Just leave it to Walt Disney, Dad. Just leave it to Walt Disney." And I thought of myself coming into the throne room on Sabbath morning, looking here and looking there and saying, "Just leave it to our Father." Wow. Just like that. So neat. better than Disneyland. This is no fantasy land. This is for real up there. And the music in heaven. Oh, the music. Do you realize that there are choirs in existence today that have been practicing together for hundreds of thousands of years? Can you imagine the blending and the tone quality they have? The anthems, the complexities of it that they have worked up? And on Sabbath morning, they come in to present their hymns and anthems of praise before our Father. Have you ever heard music so exciting that it just made the goosebumps raise all over you? When I was a small boy, I went to a concert once in Washington, D.C. And it was the first time I'd ever heard music that fantastic. And then I went home, and I went over to, well, those were the days when at home we had an old gramophone with 78 records that broke very easily. And you would put the needle down on it, and between the scratches and the static, you would hear some notes come out. And I used to remember in my mind how marvelous it had been to have been at that concert, and if only all music could be that good. Well, through the years, stereos developed, and we went to 33 and a thirds, and the quality of records got better. Sound equipment got better. Speakers got better. We got Dolby systems and all of that other stuff. And I didn't realize, I guess consciously at the time, that in my house, the music was getting progressively and progressively better and better. Got a quad system. Stand in the middle of the quad system and just blow your ears out. But I kept thinking in the back of my mind, remembering as a child, that the music at the concert hall was so marvelous. And then a few years ago, I went to a concert in Atlanta in a symphony hall. And I must admit to you, I was horribly disappointed. It wasn't better than my quad system. I could hear sound that good every day in my own living room. But I want to tell you something. The music in heaven on Sabbath morning is better than any quad system. Those anthems will make the little hairs on the back of your neck stand erect as they reverberate across that vaulted ceiling of the universe. What do you usually do after Sabbath morning worship? You go home and eat. And in my Father's house, there is a dining room and a kitchen. And we will come and we will sit down at the table together. And there the Sabbath meal will be provided for us. Fruits. Fruits from all over God's paradise. 12 manner of fruit on the table from the tree of life. What a fantastic fruit salad. There for us to eat from. And our brother Michael, our Jesus, will come and he will say the blessing. And as he will reach out and he will break the bread for us, our hearts will thrill like Cleopas as we look at his hands and see the scars and be reminded that we are there worshiping and at that Sabbath dinner together because of those marks in our brother's hands. And we will praise him and love him. Have you ever had a Thanksgiving meal or a Christmas meal with your family and aunts and uncles? And when everybody was done eating, there seemed to be a reluctance to get up from the table and break the spell of that magic moment of the family being together. No one gets, everybody just sort of pushes back from the table a little bit, but you sit and talk at the table for long. No one wants to get up and break that moment. I think that's what it will be like. But finally, we will get up from our Sabbath meal. And what do you do next? No, you don't go take a nap. The whole Sabbath day will be a day of rest now, okay? Perhaps we will go with our Father into his study. What does my Father have in the study of his house? Walls and walls of books? When I first thought about this, I thought, well, no, there won't be any books there because I read in the Spirit of Prophecy that before the flood, there were no books. because books are a sign of our lack of intelligence, because we can't remember things, we have to write it all down, and we'll remember everything. No need for books. But then I got to thinking about that. No, books are for more than just that. Books are so that we can also enjoy the information and poetry and wisdom of the ages of people that are not close to us. Maybe there is a Robert Frost of the universe who lives out in Galaxy 956. And we would like to enjoy his poetry today, but he happens to be on Galaxy 749. Why not be able to reach up off the shelves and pull down a book of his poetry and sit down in an easy chair and enjoy it? How thrilling it would be. Our Father's study must be filled with picture books to enjoy, beautiful poems to read, and the history of salvation to study. Let's move on through the study and open the French doors and go out into my Father's gardens. What a glorious place to spend the Sabbath afternoon. In my Father's gardens, where the butterflies don't fear you anymore. If you wish to study a great spangled filary, you reach out your hand and he'll glide over and alight on it. And you'll be able to hold converse with him, whatever that means. I'm not sure. But in Patriarchs and Prophets, we're told Adam and Eve held converse with the leaves and flowers and gleaned from them the secrets of life. When I was a lad, I used to like to collect butterflies, chasing them all through the fields with a great big pillowcase tacked to the end of a stick. Used to catch a few, take them and put them in a killing jar, so I could mount them and dry them and pin them to a board. Now, I really don't think I could do that anymore. I really don't. You ever watch a butterfly in a killing jar? Gasping for breath, fluttering his wings, struggling for life in that miniature horror gas chamber that you've created. How neat in heaven to be able to study them without doing that. Maybe we can get our envy, honor, and wildflowers by taking their pictures instead of going out and picking them and pressing them. In my Father's gardens, there are ponds filled with turtles and fish. Maybe at the edge of it, there's a seashore where we can step to the side and listen to the song of the humpback whales. Oh, how exciting. And it brings us all to, I guess, to the question today is, what is acceptable Sabbath behavior? I really believe that sometimes we step out of the bounds of our authority to tell people what they can do and cannot do on Sabbath. Because I think that different things speak in different ways to different people. I think what is acceptable Sabbath afternoon activity for some people is not for others, because they react differently to that activity. I believe that a person should, in evaluating what is acceptable Sabbath afternoon activity for themselves, ask themselves this question: what will be the result of this? When I am finished, will I be closer to Jesus? Will I love him more because of this activity? Or will I not? And I believe that if you can honestly say from the depths of your heart that you love Jesus more when that activity is done, I believe that's acceptable Sabbath afternoon activity. And I think different people handle it in different ways. There might be some of us in this room today who could legitimately ride a motorcycle on Sabbath afternoon out to the countryside and really enjoy the day. And enjoy the wind in your hair and the fragrance of the flowers around you and the scenery. And come back enjoying the whole experience and being closer to the Lord. I think there's others here that couldn't even touch a motorcycle and keep the Sabbath. You get on it, man, you got to pop wheelies, you got, you know. No, you can't handle it. I had a unique experience a few years ago. Another mission family and myself took our vacation at a junior camp that the East African Union owns right on the Indian Ocean, just north of Mombasa. Paradise. Pure white sandy beaches, palm trees, 80-degree water, clear as crystal, sea to the bottom. Float out across it into the snorkel, and the tropical fish come and swim around your goggles and nibble on your finger. Oh, fantastic place. Oh, makes me anxious just to think about it. And one Sabbath, while we were there with this mission family, we had had Sabbath school and a little worship service together and then had Sabbath dinner. And after Sabbath dinner, I went into my bedroom and put on my swimming trunks and came out with my goggles and snorkel and slippers and all that equipment. And this, my friend looked at me appalled and he said, Roger, he said, you're not going swimming. It's Sabbath. And I looked at him and he had a pair of binoculars hanging around his neck and a bird book in his hand. And I said, well, what are you going to do? And he said, well, we're going bird watching this afternoon. And trying my very best not to be smart, I graciously said to him, but the Lord made the birds and the fish on the same day. And I'm going fish watching. And he stopped for a minute and he thought about it. And bless his heart, he said, have a grand Sabbath day going fish watching. And we did. And we loved it. And I can honestly say at the end of the day, I really love Jesus more because of his creation. I think we have to be careful with that, that we don't use our freedom to become a stumbling block to someone else. Paul has much to say about that to us. We must carefully and judiciously choose and sometimes not do things that we're comfortable with lest we hurt someone else's experience. But in my father's house there are raccoons and descented skunks and biteless chiggers and just, you know, all to enjoy. And when the Sabbath day is done, I believe that we will come back to the throne room for Vespers. And as we come back for Vespers, and as the Sabbath leaves us, we will find ourselves hungry for Sabbath to come again. Anxious. It's been such a glorious day to be together as a family. I'm so anxious for Jesus to take us to a place where every week we can be with each other. And we can be with our parents and we can be with Jesus and his Father. Hungry for the Sabbath to come. To share with each other. What is acceptable Sabbath activity? It's getting closer to the throne. It really is. If in your house, just about an hour before the sun goes down, if the children come and say to you, oh, when's the sun going to be down? Then there's the wrong kind of Sabbath keeping going on at your house. But if at the end of the Sabbath day, your children are walking around the house singing, Sabbath is a happy day, then the right kind of Sabbath keeping is going on. I tell you, I love Jesus so much tonight. I love him for the Sabbath that he has in store for us in our Father's house. Sabbaths are for being close to the throne.